SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back coming up on 20 into hour two on this weekend preview at the races. We're doing a little bit of looking back as well, of course, with all of the stake action that will feed into the Breeders' Cup. Nick Tamaro, good for that kind of review as well. And he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. And looking forward to the weekend, although I will be kind of away from... I'm not going to watch a lot of racing this weekend. Tomorrow will be at Andy Kerr Stadium for Colgate Cornell. And
looking to kick their teeth in.
In a big way. Because as you're taught early on as a freshman, the great rhyme from Ithaca, high above Cayuga's waters, there's an awful smell. Some say it's Cayuga's waters, but we say it's Cornell.
I like it.
And Colgate on an absolute roll. The Maroon have one of the best defenses in the country. They have not given up a touchdown in four games and undefeated. Kind of fun. And then as soon as the football wraps up, we go right into the Class of 65 arena, New Hampshire visiting for Colgate versus the Wildcats for hockey. So
man.
You got to, as I said the other day, you got to marry right to turn to the wife and say, honey, do you want to go to Hamilton on Saturday and watch Colgate football and Colgate hockey?
It's a big parlay.
There's something in it for her because we're also on Sunday, we're checking out some venues for a rehearsal dinner with the Zachary and Andrea betrothed and set for a June of next year wedding. And so we're going to survey some rehearsal dinner joints.
Not the first weekend of June, I hope. Or the second, I guess. Weekend.
They did it right, the kids. June 22nd, I think, is the date.
Ah, perfect.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely ideal. They did great. And we warned them. We did say to them, Belmont
is no-go.
Off limits, yes. And they acknowledged that. So we're looking at a place in Cazenovia some distillery looks good, and someplace in Fayetteville and Manlius and Syracuse. So I got a busy weekend. Plus, I'm seeing my goddaughter and her new baby, and it's, you know. This is what you got to look forward to, Nick. Of course, you might not
that
wait.
Married life.
Well, you might not wait till you're 50 something to get married. You might do it in a more reasonable manner.
a little bit. Yeah, I'm not quite 50. If my mother's listening, then I'm gonna say, oh yeah, it'll be long before that.
I love it. Well, let's get some thoughts from you. What struck you, Nick, out of those preps last week? I've been trying not to call them preps. Steve Haskin actually said that, and he made that's really true. These are big races in their own right. But from the stakes weekend, what'd you like?
Well, neither of you are necessarily wrong. I mean, they are big races, but they're also preps. So they're, I thought that as far as the races in New York went, it was pretty tough not to be impressed with complexity. But, you know, there's a certain bit of... of doubt, I think, that comes in when a horse, a two-year-old, lightly raced two-year-old, sort of blitzes the field the way he did, and similarly the way it was done on Sunday in the Frisette, that you kind of think, like, well, you know, they ran him off their feet, and it might just be a two-year-old who's a little bit ahead of the curve. Now we've seen Chad Brown have two pretty prime, he was a head away from winning two champagnes in a row. We've seen him have some quality horses for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. This horse looks a little bit different than Good Magic. What they may have had in common is that I don't think either wants to go particularly far, but we do know that what distance Complexity will go, he'll do it very quickly. And he set a very legitimate pace and ran a very good race to just to stave off all the competition and kind of put everybody in reverse. And Jaywalk did the same thing on Sunday. And what's interesting about her race is that if you look at the chart, you see that the second and third place finishers were at the back of the pack early, and they were horses that really got the best of the setup. So they were both impressive efforts. You know, I don't know how they translate necessarily into them doing it around two turns. And in that type of environment, I don't know if they'll be able to just clear off and keep it going, but they were interesting enough, and I think that those two will each get a great deal of support in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and Juvenile Fillies. As far as everything else at Belmont went, obviously it was an upset, and I don't really know if any of these horses are going to the Breeders' Cup necessarily, but Raging Bull was a real dud in the Hill Prince and probably ended a lot of hopes for Pick Five tickets there. One other thing I want to say about the Champagne. There's a lot of chatter about Code of Honor, and I know that Code of Honor is a horse that is probably always going to be somewhat overrated because it's a Shug McGahee horse, and he's got a sexy pedigree, and he won first time out, and it sort of drums up a lot of memories for people of Honor Code. He ran well, and I do think there's a pretty decent chance that Code of Honor ends up being a good three-year-old. I don't really... He looks more like a Remsen horse to me than a Breeders' Cup Juvenile horse. I don't really know if Shug will make that approach. I guess we'll see. It'll be interesting to me how that shakes out. The dud in that race was Aurelius Maximus, who I thought had a pretty good setup and looked like he was in position, and then he was kind of one pace late. It also wasn't a particularly promising effort from Endorsed, who I expected quite a bit more from and thought that the way he ran in his debut, he was really going to be a horse to watch out for in the Breeders' Cup. Wildcat took care of a bad group in the Beldame. Hard to believe that Elate wouldn't have won that race rather handily had she been healthy. I guess Wildcat will be probably, I don't know, fourth, fifth choice in the distaff. Certainly doesn't have any reason not to go. Disco Partner was sensational winning the Belmont Turf Sprint and showed quite a bit more tactical speed than he had before. I'm sure it's in Christophe Clement's mind that going 5.5 on the turf at Churchill on what could very well be kind of a rain-softened late autumn turf course, you probably want to be in position to not have to necessarily outfoot everybody. Now, that being said, Disco Partner's always been a different horse in New York, so especially at Belmont. So we'll see if that translates. He looks like one of the choices to me in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, which should be a pretty interesting group. It was Jaywalk that was the impressive Frisette winner that I brought up earlier, doing things kind of similarly to Complexity. I didn't really expect it. I guess the disappointment in there was Covfefe, who we thought would probably improve off that promising debut at Churchill, but may end up being a horse that doesn't want to go really much farther than 6 or 7 furlongs. And what can you say about Four Star Crook? I mean, Four Star Crook is... She's in the shadows of horses like Sister Charlie, and, you know, you don't really often think about her, but, I mean, what a cool horse. Just a lunch pail horse that shows up every single time, and when they came off the turn in that race, she had been outmoved by On the Moon Again, and as soon as they straightened away, it was like you just knew she was going to catch her. You just knew she was going to win that race, and it was as impressive as she's been time and again, and she deserved that grade one so much. Was very, very glad to see it, so that, I think, capped off what was a pretty cool weekend of racing at Belmont. Keeneland was nuts as far as some of the results. If you were on Nick Shares or Nick's Go, I actually used Nick's Go on my pick four that was, I believe, defunct by then, but because he was a horse who had been close to a very, very fast pace last time, and the other main speed did get scratched out. I think it was just the way he won and how all of that happened that shocked everybody. I certainly heard from a lot of people, friends and others, that the result of the First Lady was a little frustrating to them, I think, with the expectation that Kidura would be back on the lead, and it ended up that a Raving Beauty was on the lead, and it sort of played out that she was able to dictate terms to everybody else. The thing that I would encourage everybody to remember is that a lot was put on one result in that race, one sort of goofy result where Kidura was able to get to the lead in the Boston Spa because Julien Le Perroux can't get horses out of the gate or to the lead in due order, and Hawksmoor was then raided. And Arabian Beauty is a much better horse than Kidura. I mean, really, there is really no comparison between the two of them. I know Kidura had 103 buyer speed figure winning the Boston Spa, but Arabian Beauty really is a much, much better horse than her. And actually, if I had Arabian Beauty, I'd run her in the Breeders' Cup Mile, which does not look like a particularly strong race, and is one that that I think you'd be willing to try, given some of the things that she's done and some of the races she's run that really make her competitive. You know, I'm not too familiar with what's going to come over from Europe for that race, but I wouldn't fear it. As far as some of the other results go, I think there were Restless Rider looks like a really strong juvenile fillies prospect. I think that was an impressive win for her on Friday in the Alcibiades, and she looked like a horse with a lot of talent pretty early in her career. It was cool to see Bucaro win the Woodford again, small-time barn, always nice to have them winning big races. And you know, in many different divisions, it's shaping up as what should be a pretty interesting Breeders' Cup. I don't know if there's necessarily the big names and maybe the sex appeal, so to speak, with some of the horses that are going to run, but no doubt there are a lot of quality horses that are going to show up. And obviously the news that there's a chance that Enable could run in the Breeders' Cup turf has certainly thrown some spice into it.
Well, we actually, in some ways, I think, can appreciate maybe the I think what you're angling at, almost the purity of this, the way this cup is shaping up. There may not be, you know, the big stars that we've had in some years, but from that, the flip side of that is you end up with just raw handicapping exercises and betting opportunities, and I on that end, I think it'll make it more, not more interesting, it just maybe different. I mean, it does seem that one of the exercises we've always gone through, Nick, is looking at the 2 days and trying to find potential singles, and over the years it's included horses like Goldakova and Midnight Loot was a horse both years that I thought couldn't lose, and Groupie Doll. I used Groupie Doll as a can't lose horse. So from that angle, that may be a little bit more difficult, I think, heading into this.
Yeah, and I sort of was kind of hinting at that on Twitter the other day, saying that if I had to ask you right now who your most likely Breeders' Cup winner is, what would you say? And I said that mine is Newspaper of Record, who will probably be, you know, somewhat buried on an earlier race on Friday, so singling her might not make things a whole lot easier for me, but I do think she's the likeliest winner by far. And I heard a variety of answers, and, you know, for example, I think three or four people brought up Catalina Cruiser, who I would say, I think we'll see exactly who will show up in the dirt mile if that's where he ends up going, and I can think of a couple of horses that I'd be willing to bet against him right now. So I heard a few people say Imperial Hint, and you know, I'll take any one of Promises Fulfilled, Limousine Liberal, and Roy H against Imperial Hint at this point, as much as I, and you know, I've loved Imperial Hint for a long mm-hmm. time, but you know, as far as singling him, he just doesn't really look like a single to me, and that was more or less it. I was wondering if somebody was going to tell me Accelerate. There were no Accelerate answers, and I think one person brought up Enable and said that if she comes over, she's a single, and the only and very well might be. The only thing I would say is that it's pretty tough to ignore the success or lack thereof ARC winners have had in the Breeders' Cup, and even ARC also rants have had a difficult time. So it does. It feels like there's a lot of parity in a lot of these divisions. Some would say it's because there's not necessarily the quality there's been in the past, but however you want to shake it, it looks like something that'll provide a great wagering opportunity. And again, and we'll talk about this between now and Breeders' Cup. Breeders' Cup is for bettors. Now, the Derby is a great betting opportunity. The Derby card is a lot of fun. So is the Belmont card. So are most of the Saratoga cards. But there's nothing like the Breeders' Cup for bettors, because we're just served this cornucopia of great opportunities where just one hit, or even a few more, can make for a really fun day.
No, and I was going right to my list, as you mentioned, you know, the sprint, the filly and mare sprint. I don't know. I'm sure people will lean heavily on the Bafferts, Marley's Freedom, and Dream
yeah,
Tree.
Right. There was a lot of Marley's Freedom chatter, and deservedly so. You know, she seems like one that you want to, you'll be comfortable sort of zooming in on a little bit. But yeah, I mean, her biggest competition will be her stablemate, and Dream Tree looks like she could almost be anything at this point. So it's tough to tell.
And I'm just going through the other, Dirt Mile. How do you, Catalina Cruiser and City of Light, how do you separate those two?
Exactly. I mean, I know that people are going to probably hold the forego against City of Light. I think it's pretty safe to say that City of Light is a better horse than he ran that day. And so I would not really hold that against him. So that makes him, and look, I mean, we're going to certainly mention that John Sadler has not had a great deal of success shipping outside of California, and that matters. So that's something that you have to have take into consideration when you're looking at these races, because he's going to saddle the favorite in two of the biggest races on Saturday.
People are going to gravitate on this front. I mean, if we're talking about the heavy favorites, to Newspaper of Record. But I can tell you that a week ago when Nick Luck joined me, he lauded Just Wonderful for O'Brien and La Pelosa, among others. That horse of Ellison's, the Macam Bullet, is a horse I already know that I'm going to use as a value-type player. Then there was that crazy pop-up Buzz Schwartz winner, the craziest thing I've ever seen. He buys a horse on Thursday and wins on wins on the ARC undercard on Saturday, Lily's Candle. I don't even a Newspaper of Record that people are going to be gaga over, even a horse like that has got some serious competition in the form of outsiders that are invading. So this is the exercise. This is why we love it.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see who comes over from Europe to face her. Obviously the biggest challenge for her is going to come from whoever comes from overseas. I mean, because quite honestly, and with due respect to Concrete Rose and anybody else who has won a prep race for either of those editions, or either of that particular Breeders' Cup race, there's nobody domestically who can compete with her right now. And that's not to say that won't change in 2019, but she's at a completely different level than the other horses in that division. However, you know, we've certainly seen a lot of the European interests do well. They've actually had more success in the juvenile turf than the juvenile fillies turf. That probably has a lot to do with Chad Brown also. But, I mean, Aidan O'Brien he's always been well represented in the Breeders' Cup. He's always been a great supporter of the event. And I think a Churchill Breeders' Cup for them is one that offers a great deal of appeal. So to me, my first Churchill Breeders' Cup, I'm very, very excited.
One of my favorites ever, 2000. That was my first cup at the Downs, and absolutely was a fabulous, an unbelievable cup. One of my all-time favorites. Let's hit a couple of spots for the weekend, and of course, heavy rains in the New York metropolitan area, Nick, and off the turf today, I imagine will be all right to run the Pebbles and the Floral Park tomorrow. At the very least, they'll get the two stakes in, and we'll don't know what you know about the rest of that. Let me see the other how many other turf? Yeah, there's a few others, obviously state bred maidens. And Open Company maidens going 7 on the grass. Then maiden 40 to close the card. I imagine maybe they'll run, at the very least, they're going to run the Floral Park and the Pebbles on the grass.
Yeah, it would seem as such. And the Pebbles actually came up a very interesting race. And I don't envy the job that David Aragona does making the morning line, but I'm going to be absolutely positively stunned if Significant Form is not the favorite in this race. She looks like a horse that'll be in the 2-1 to 5-2 range at most to me, and it'll be interesting that she will run almost concurrently with her stablemate Rushing Fall, who she was defeated by last time in the Lake Placid. And if there's a highlight reel of rides that Irad Ortiz has put on horses throughout his career, and without question he's put on a number of incredible rides, his ride on Significant Form last time will not be on it. It was a very poorly ridden race from a tactical perspective. He buried her behind horses and hoped that she would find a way out, and instead ran into a tiring horse in the vicinity of the 3/8 pole. So Irad is up at Woodbine tomorrow, and Manny Franco gets on. And the biggest thing going on, other than her coming off a poor trip, is that she's taking a significant class drop. So, pun intended, I guess. So I would expect her to be very, very tough in this race. Her stablemate Altea is actually a horse that I think has somewhat of a chance. But the interesting horse to me, especially at anywhere near her 15-1 morning line, is Good Things Take Time, who was third in the Risk Averse behind Monte Cristo, who had a much better trip than Good Things Take Time did. There was also no pace in that race whatsoever, and it was really a strong effort by Good Things Take Time, I think, to even pass a few horses to get up for third. It does feel like there's going to be some pace in here with Super Striking and Cool Beans signed up. There's a couple more horses that I think can press the issue a little bit in the opening stages, some stretch outs and horses that have at least shown some willingness to get near the lead. So as far as multi-race plays go, I mean, I think Significant Form is a horse that you can probably loan A, and then I'm going to back up with Good Things Take Time and Victorine, and I'll probably use God Stormy just a little bit. I don't like the look of this horse coming in here. This is a Cassie horse that was running very frequently, that was running very well, and then all of a sudden took a three-month break, which is unlike that barn with horses that are really going well. So I'm going to take a little bit more of a critical stance and probably relegate her to more like a C in any kind of multi-race bet. Floral Park, it pretty much goes through Lull, who has just been, she's just been better sprinting on the turf than most of the horses in this field, with the exception of Lady Alexandra. You just wonder if Lady Alexandra's Presque Isle Masters, given that it was coming off a little bit of a layoff, was maybe a sign that things might be going the wrong way. That's my big concern. I also don't know if in a bit of a pressure-packed six-furlong race, if Lady Alexandra really has any advantage. I feel like the good race that she ran in the license fee was courtesy of her being able to track a slow pace. Now, she really ran her lungs out in the Highlander, and to be run down by Long on Value in that field was just tremendous. But I guess my worry is that with Tilly's Lily and Orquiette and Lull having some tactical speed too, this thing might just get a little bit too forced early, and that might be a problem for her if Luis Saez tries to keep her close. There are a number of horses coming out of a stake at Laurel a few weeks ago that was run on a yielding turf course, and I think you probably want to give all of them some amount of consideration, including Fire Key, who really had a huge tactic change that day by Julian Pimentel, and it worked like a charm. She ended up coming from well off the pace. That was, even though it was run over the bog, it was an exceptionally strong pace that totally came apart late, and Fire Key was in position to take advantage for Pimentel, and now comes back, probably will run over what ends up being a similar kind of turf course. And I think, you know, with her maybe having that potential to move forward, you want to serve notice. You probably want to use Fear No Evil as well, who, unlike Fire Key, was a little bit closer to that pace, probably a little bit closer to the pace than she needed to be, given the way the race unfolded, and she was beaten by a head. So I think there's an argument to be made that she actually ran better. Being drawn outside might not be the worst thing for her either. So those are horses I think that you'll use in addition to Lull, who does look like a pretty solid favorite. And hopefully these two, I mean, I think, as you said, these two races will be on the turf, and hopefully we'll get a couple more just to spice things up.
Did you glance at Woodbine at all?
Glance, no more than that. The Canadian International is an interesting race. There probably is not a whole bunch of talent, you know, relative to what's been in this field in the past, but I would say it's a solid enough group, and I mean, I didn't really have anybody that I was dying to bet in looking at it the first time around. I'm actually going to Keeneland, so I spent most of my time looking at Keeneland up to this point. But the international, the Johnny Bear is one of the better stories I think you'll find in Canadian racing, given that he's really been able to step his game up a couple of times in big spots, including last time in the Northern Dancer, his second straight Northern Dancer. And he got a great ride from Luis Contreras, and so obviously they'll try to have lightning strike twice. As far as I didn't do a lot of work on the Euro Shippers, but Desert Encounter looked like an interesting enough horse, one that's geared towards distance, maybe hasn't quite been Group 1 caliber overseas, even really been more like Group 3 caliber, but you know, we've certainly seen some Group 3 caliber Europeans come over here and do very well. It'll be interesting to me to see how Spring Quality runs. He obviously did not pick up the soft turf course last time whatsoever. That was not an effort that we'd ever seen from him before, and this will be probably a more honestly run race for him. He'll be allowed to settle and make one run, and that's something I think that suits him a little bit more. So I'm I'd want to take a decent enough price, though. With Tizza Slam and Fantastic signed up, I would imagine Fantastic will be put on the lead. He was foolishly rated in the Sword Dancer, and that obviously worked against him. Thundering Blue is the other one, of course, that's worth mentioning. Group one placed, having run third behind Roaring Lion, comes over for a relatively unknown barn and some pretty nondescript connections, but this is a horse who came to hand at once. I mean, he won the Sky Bet York almost out of after improving in prior starts, and he was one that I don't think anybody expected to be Group 1 caliber maybe last year, but he's certainly gotten there, and is probably the headliner in this field given the American contingent.
With the Keeneland opportunity, anything that people should know about that jumped at you?
I mean, as far as tomorrow's card goes, I think the Rushing Fall is pretty much a cinch in the QE2, so I'm not going out of my way to make a big bet there. There are a couple of horses in the 10th of the 8th race that lead into the QE2 that I'm somewhat interested in, and chief among them is Quick, who is back in Kentucky, and I think is a horse that had shown some talent earlier in her career, didn't fire in both starts at Saratoga, but actually didn't run as badly, I think, as it looks last time. She was kind of hung out to dry most of the way, wide on the course, and was relative in some proximity of a pretty strong pace. This just feels like a horse that getting back to Kentucky is really going to benefit. This is a barn, of course, that does its best work in Kentucky. That's home. So I'm looking to see if I can squeeze her in at a little bit of a price. As far as there's an earlier two-year-old race where there's a couple of interesting-looking first-time starters, including Declined for Mike Maker, who's by Will Take Charge, but out of a two-year-old debut winner who was also a stake winner and is a half to one two-year-old winner. So this looked like what might be a little bit of an interesting two-year-old. The good thing is where the race occurs on the card, you'll be able to get a window into whether he's taking some money. So those were a couple of the ones that I'm at least thinking about at this point, but definitely much deliberation will take place between now and then.
Very good. Well, have a great trip. We got the contest Saturday or Sunday?
There's a $400 buy-in Saturday, and the big one is on Sunday. Big one's the, I don't know what Jim calls the fall one. The spring version is the grade one gamble. So something along those lines. But he'll give out, I think, one BCBC spot and three NHC spots tomorrow, six BCBC spots Sunday, and 10 NHC spots. So it's a lot of big opportunity to qualify.
Very much, and everybody convening. Hope the weather cooperates. And Nick, as always, best of luck. I appreciate it, and we'll start to zero in toward Cup.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks for having me. Have a good weekend.
Go, Nick Damrow, everybody. There you go. The Strohs who look good. Look good. I think we're on a Houston Milwaukee collision course. Let's take the break. Past the bottom of the hour, we've got Tom Quigley next. Hammer is going to come on last. He's on his way late to the office. So we'll talk to Hammer around 11:40 probably. So Quigley, Privman, and Nicole Russo in rapid succession here over the next hour. Stay with us. Weekend Preview at the Races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you grow up, live it like a
back at the races, some Scissor Sisters, and we head out to California. Got a few California visitors yet to hear in the second half this morning between Tom Quigley now and Jay Privman to follow, and Hammer as well, and Quigley's Corner Time. Tom Quigley, good morning.
West is best, Steve, right? Look, at not only is racing West is best, but what about sports? We've got the Dodgers obviously going in the National League Championship Series. We've got the Rams, one of two undefeated teams in the NFL. We've got the Lakers with LeBron in town. And, of course, we've got the great race place with some good racing. And, of course, a lot to look forward to as we move forward to the Breeders' Cup.
Without question. And looking forward on a number of those fronts. I got to ask you before we dive into any action or talk about any results that you feel really need to be aware of. The contest weekend, and you've got three out of the five that you're going to get to between opening and closing day, November 4th, and you had the doubleheader this past weekend. Give everybody kind of a blow-by-blow and some of the fun stories that came out of it.
You know, our mutual friend, Steve, Leo Vukmanovic, likes to use a term whenever there's a very solid, rock-solid handicapper in the room. He refers to them as badasses, and believe me, we had a lot of badasses this weekend playing our tournament, not only because you could be on track participating, but you could also be playing through online through ExpressBet. And that really was where at least one of the winners really plied his trade. To set the table for the listeners who might not recall or who didn't participate, you needed a total of $3,000 each day in order to participate. $2,000 was your live bankroll. $1,000 went to the entry fee. All the entry fees that we collect go back to the players in terms of prizes. And on day number one, a very familiar tournament player by the name of Tony Zhao wound up killing everybody other than one player, because he turned his $2,000 into $26,000. That's real live hard-earned cash. He's not a guy that boasts a lot on Twitter. He's very humble. He doesn't brag to know it all. And so, you know, these are the type of players you're playing against when you play in these tournaments. It's high risk, high reward. And not only did Tony walk away at the end of the day with $26,000 cash, he walked away with a Breeders' Cup seed. He walked away with a lot of respect from his other players. And that's really what the tournament angle is all about, Steve. It's, you know, we have a lot of camaraderie when we go to the races and we shoot the breeze with our friends when we're trying to scope out the winners. But when you, you know, when you play in these tournaments, you develop lifelong friendships. And Tony really has captured the attention of a lot of tournament players from around the country because this is not his first rodeo nor his first victory. So he's proven to kind of rise, to kind of be the cream of the crop and rise to the top. And likewise on Sunday, Steve, we had a former NHC champ who was out at Santa Anita who plays in a lot of our tournaments. He resides in Chicago. He loves Arcadia. He loves Santa Anita. He came out to participate. His name is Jim Bennis. He turned his $2,000 into almost $17,500. And just like Tony, he walks away with some additional prize money of $10,000, a Pegasus seat, which is worth $12,000, plus his bankroll. So these guys are sharp players, and I think a lot of the players who listen to your show who are sharp already know that.
Well, we got one more. Let's see. You've got the closing day, I know, on Sunday, the November 4th contest, and then there's one next Saturday too, right, the 20th?
And next Saturday is very economical. It's 8 days from today. It's only a $500 buy-in. So those listeners where it might be $3,000, a bit too steep for them to participate. $500 is same format. Only the Santa Anita places, win, play, show, exacta, trifecta wagers are allowed. Get involved if you're just sitting at home because, again, you can play an express. But and as you mentioned, Steve, we've got the big one on closing day. That'll be right after the two-day Breeders' Cup weekend tournament. And Santa Anita is a satellite location for the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. So anybody who might not want to go to Churchill Downs or doesn't want to travel, we're certainly available as a satellite location for any Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge players.
Excellent. Well, beyond the contest action, plenty of terrific performances on the Oval. And the one win that I have, and I didn't get a chance to reach out to Bill Spahr, but I was really delighted to see Sky Diamonds put it back together and win the LA Woman. Talked to Marty McGee earlier. Marty tracks the Filly and Mare Sprint for the form. It's his division. And he says Spahr is kind of taking a wait and see. He was not ready to commit to running Sky Diamonds again in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint.
I'll tell you what, everything you need to know about Bill Spahr, Steve. I happened to be on set previewing the pick six for that particular day, and the Sky Diamonds victory, the LA Woman, was the very first race in that sequence. So I watched the race from the set, and of course, like you, I was happy for the connections that Sky Diamond won. I turn around to exit the set, which is located in the paddock. Who do I see marking horses in the paddock while Sky Diamonds is in the winner's circle? None other than Bill Spahr. The next race was a claiming race. He marks each and every horse, him and his assistant, Daryl Rader. He was not in the winner's circle. He was in the paddock marking the horses in a claiming race for the next race. That tells you the amount of focus and determination Bill Spahr has. He is one of the sharpest trainers we have here in Southern California, and that's not by accident. He knows the inventory on the backside better than anybody else.
Well, and we'll see about getting her to Churchill. And we should mention Tiago Pereira had two stake wins amongst the weekend. We had the Monday holiday too, and the two-year-olds on the grass to talk about. But Gary Stevens with a pair of stake wins, Pereira with a pair of stake wins, Paco Lopez on Roy H. It was kind of a mixed bag. How about even Edwin Maldonado got into it, winning on Fahan Mura, who's streaking for Vladimir Serin, and Gutierrez on Laker Ball for O'Neill. It was kind of different. We kept Pratt out, and of course he's been riding it as well. He's come and poached some horses in the East, but some of the Van Dyke Pratt Smith troika was kept off the board.
Yeah, we spread the wealth, and it was a good weekend to spread the wealth, like you said, because there was a lot of stakes actions. Flavian actually riding to Keeneland today. He'll be back here in Southern California tomorrow. So we had no racing yesterday, as you well know. So his agent, Derek Lawson, and he decided to go to Keeneland and race there on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So he's spreading his wings. But you know very well, Steve, we have a very, very talented jockey colony. Gary Stevens coming up the rail with the Jeff Bondi horse. That was exciting. He might, you know, he might have a few years on his legs, but he's not intimidated at all. And he knows the shortest way to the winner's circle. So it was a fun weekend for Han Mira, you mentioned. That was a Breeders' Cup performance. You know, so many of these overnight stakes, which are not graded, come up the toughest. It seems like they have the fullest fields. But for Han Mira, brilliant with her early speed. And so Maldonado fits her like a glove.
A couple of different stories, really, within these results. One is Bondi, who started to get hot over the summer and really seems resurgent after a bit of a lull, kind of a quiet period. Stevens is riding terrific. I mean, he's his hips and knees, he must feel really good because he's riding as good. I think he's fully, you know, after that knee replacement, even though you come back, it takes you at least 90 to 100 days to get back into riding shape, and now it's even a few months removed from that, and it feels like Stevens is really now 100%.
And let's face it, success begets success, right, Steve? Because I think a lot of the trainers were skeptical about Gary's comeback. His opportunities were limited. Only a few trainers are giving him mounts. But the more he hits the winner's circle, the more the trainers will reach out because he's a Hall of Fame jockey. Obviously, he needs no introduction with his credentials. And you mentioned Jeff Bondi. I think it's interesting to point out that Bondi, although he's had a bit of a presence here in Southern California, he really hasn't come down here full-time to Southern California except for maybe the last 18 months or so. And it's a transition, right? I mean, there's a ton of good trainers up in Northern California. I've been blessed to spend some time up at Golden Gates, and there are some hard-knocking horsemen up there. But there's still a transition to come down here to Southern California. Obviously, Hollendorfer is well underway in terms of making that transition. It's been seamless for him the last year or so. But all these guys, you see Jonathan Wong now knocking on the door a little bit, John Martin coming down with a few more runners. They're going to go through a learning period where their win percentages are not as high down here as they are up north, simply because they need to make that transition, understand the training methodology, understand the condition book, and that's going to take some time, even though they're very, very talented horsemen.
Well, the Sherman team. I mean, there's no shortage when it comes to the Northern Cal to Southern Cal connections. A couple of maiden special performances that I really haven't, I mean, I think I've noted in passing, but didn't really detail. That Metropole on Monday, yet another Baffert, and I'm going to forget the stablemate that scratched, but there you go. Coliseum will turn up soon. But Metropole, solid enough performance, 75 buyer, and Van Dyke aboard, well-bred. And the other one is even better bred, actually, Coliseum.
And it's funny. You can basically go to the windows whenever Baffert debuts a two-year-old first-time starter here in Southern California. Courtesy of Brad Free at the Racing Forum, this year the Baffert Barn, 14 for 20 with first-time two-year-old starters in Southern California. More importantly, they always get wagered off the board, Steve. Granted, this was the original morning line, but Metropole was the second choice at 5-2 on John White's morning line. Went off at 3-5 odds. Never looked like a loser, but like you said, he's loaded for bear. He's got another first-time starter tomorrow that is working lights out. In the fourth race on Saturday's card at Santa, number two in the fourth race, Cruel Intention. XBTV has a wonderful feature where you can go on there free of charge, look up any workouts. I would encourage you to watch some of the workouts that they have there posted for Cruel Intention. Baffert might make that statistic 15 out of 21 after tomorrow.
To go back to the scratched colt, that was the Tappet out of Game Face. The Godolphin homebred Coliseum, so watch for that. And we should also include in this Improbable, that was a first out success at 2-5 with Stretford. And, you know, that goes back to the 29th. And I even said to Baffert last Monday, flying since Flying Scotsman's win beat Omaha Beach, and Baffert debuted Power Player. This was a mile turf race for the two-year-old boys, and that's going to end up being a key race, Tom. That was the September 29th fourth race, a mile on the grass.
Yeah, September 29th is also when Improbable won in race number
right.
one, Steve. And I had Andy Harrington as my seminar guest over this past holiday weekend, and we talked, of course, about a lot of different things. But he honestly thinks that Improbable, of all the two-year-olds that Baffert has debuted, might be one of his Kentucky Derby main contenders. And that's, you know, that's high praise coming from a guy who's out there every morning watching these
wow.
horses perform. So, you know, Improbable, he wasn't super fancy in his debut victory, but as Andy indicated, he probably wants two turns in Stratford and the second place finisher from the Simon Callahan barn. That's made every horses to watch list. Jeff Siegel, Brad Free. So look for that horse not only to maybe hit the winner's circle next time, but perhaps be odds on favorite.
You know, people may also, if you go back a week ago today, or was it Saturday? It might have been Saturday. Mandela in that nightcap had the $50 horse, the filly, Courteous.
You're right. Ridden by Joe Talamo. That was a wide-open race and hadn't been seen, I believe, first-time turf, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, we've talked about resurgent jockeys. Joe Talamo getting his foot in a lot of different doors. His longtime agent, Scotty McClellan, is getting him in the Baffert barn. He's getting him in the Mandela barn. So it's good to see Talamo kind of sprout his wings a little bit, because way back when he was a youngster, Bobby Frankel kind of identified him as one of the up-and-coming jockeys down in Cajun country and brought him out to Southern California. He was successful outriding Garrett Gomez many times to the wires, but then his career kind of went into a neutral stall pattern, but now it's kind of been resurgent, probably coinciding with getting some more mounts for the Baffert barn.
You know who else is winning his share is the Espinoza nephew, that Asa Espinoza is finding the winner's circle.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because sometimes there's a story behind the story, and I think with Asa, the big story is his agent is Brian Beach. And Brian Beach is the agent also for Asa's uncle, who's Victor Espinoza, who we all know is laid up right now. So Asa is getting a lot of those mounts that Victor would get, and he's also got a very capable agent in Brian Beach. He knows his way around the backside as well. And it's Juan Flores, who used to ride in Southern California way back when, plied his trade this summer up north at Emerald Downs, and he had a very, very strong campaign up there. He's coming down to Southern California. He's actually riding one of the favorites in tomorrow's earlier races on the Saturday card here at Sanita. His agent is longtime, well-known Hall of Fame agent, Vince DeGregory, who has had multiple Hall of Fame jockeys who he's represented. He's representing S1. The colony is becoming a little bit more competitive. It's going to be hard for S1 to break in, but he's got the right guy, and he's going to show up on a morning line favorite tomorrow.
Vince DeGregory, a native of where I sit right now, Greenwich, New York. If you didn't know that, Vince grew up right here. How about that?
Vince is a classic racetracker. I'm sure you spent a lot of time speaking with him. I've had him on the seminar before. You could sit and have coffee with him all day long, because the stories he has never ends, and each one gets more interesting than the next.
And just ageless, too. I mean, it's in his blood. Absolutely. Hey, you know, I got to get from you is some insight into today's two Santa Anita races toward the Stronach 5. And everything starts at Gulfstream West today, 4:34 Eastern. The Santa Anita 3rd and 4th, though, Tom, give everybody some help in those two legs of the Stronach 5.
I'm going to go in reverse order, Steve, and here's why. In race number 4, we're going 6 furlongs in the main track for maiden fillies, 3-year-olds and up. And if you take a look at the runners, if you have the past performances in front of you, seven of the 9 runners exit the same race. It's the 11th race on September 1st. The reason why I bring that up is twofold. First of all, a lot of players just basically assume that the results that happened in one race are transferable to the next race. That's not always true. But the more important angle when you're handicapping this race for Stronach 5 purposes is that September 1st was the track that was extremely slow at Del Mar. The times were ridiculously slow, and the best way to remember that day is that was the day of the Del Mar debutante. And we saw Bella Fina win that day sprinting.
Oh, yeah.
She, But she came home in 125 and change. Her last quarter was almost 15 seconds. And I immediately thought to myself, oh, boy, we're going to have to kind of reshuffle the deck for the Breeders' Cup Juveniles Fillies race. Now she's obviously come back at Santa Anita and really kind of vindicated herself that perhaps that performance that day was more a function of the track than it was of her ability. So I want to forewarn everyone playing the Stronach 5 or even our Rainbow Pick 6 that race 4 today, which is part of both of those sequences, a number of these runners come back off of performing on that racetrack. And one great example would be number 8, See That Kid. Bear Rounder decides to ride back. Blinkers come off for the Baltus Barn. I just have a feeling a lot of runners didn't like the track that day. So your work is cut out for you as you analyze race number 4 at Santa Anita simply because of those two factors. So for my particular purposes, I'm going to spread as deep as I can in that race. In the other race, which is race number 3, if I can find the page because I've been flipping a lot of pages here, that's the maiden race. I can find it. Here we go. That's the maiden race coming down the hill. And I'm using four runners here, Steve. 2, 3, 6, 9 are the runners I'm using. I'll go in order. A Ton of Run drops out of a maiden special weight race for trainer Mike Pipey. This is Pipey's MO. He likes runners coming back off of layoffs. He knows he's going to get a price. The race that a ton of run in exits was very live. The first and second place finishers came back to win. We know that he kind of likes the hill because his debut back in May of 2017 came down the hill. Number 3, Rumpus Cat takes a drop down in class for the Ellis Barn. Take a look at the dam, Sweet Cat of Mine. Blinkers go back on. When he wore blinkers back earlier in his career, he was most effective. Number 6, Bahamian, the likely post-time favorite, even though he's not the morning line favorite, drops down in class for the Callahan Barn. He's so effective doing this, 57% with a win percentage. First-time gelding as well. And the runner drawn near the outside, Kapal, just throw the last race out, 2 turns on the dirt at Los Alamitos. He wants to come down the hill as well, a bullet workout signifying that last race was nothing more than just an aberration. 2, 3, 6, 9 in race 3 at Santa Anita, Steve, and all or as many as you can afford in race number 4.
A couple of notes about that third race at Santa Anita. I'm surprised that Seahawk Wave doesn't make the ticket for you stretching out here and ran credibly in the career debut. This is Mark Glatt and Talamo. Those stats for Bahamian, for Simon Callahan dropping into maiden claiming company, I don't know if I've ever seen that. He's 9 for 14 with a $7 ROI. That's an ROI that you might see, you know, with 5 or 6 starters, not with 14. That's amazing. And one of these horses that you look at and you say, well, okay, ran into all kinds of killers, including Solomini in his second career start. But this is tricky. I had the 4, the 6, the 9, and you didn't like Baltus either, huh? The first time gelding Chris's Wildcat on the drop.
Well, I'll tell you why, actually, Steve. Both Seahawk Wave and Chris's Wildcat come out of the same race. That race was won by a bit of an obscure winner, paid $61 to win. More importantly, as it relates back to Seahawk Wave, you can see that he was basically ignored in his debut, 62-1 on debut. Granted, he ran credibly. It's always tough to perform well from those outside posts sprinting over at Del Mar. So I can understand why you like him on the drop, but the Glatt Barn has been so cold. I've been on record talking about that quite a bit. The only winner he has this meet from 18 starts is Sharp Samurai, so I'm willing to beat him. I am concerned about Chris's Wildcat. He is a first-time gelding, gets what I would consider to be an upgrade from a jockey standpoint. So he would probably be next on my ticket if I could afford it, but I'm going to try and beat both of them simply because I think the race they exit was a little bit weak.
Interesting. And when it comes to the anchor leg, I see that cat. I like you bringing up the slow surface at Del Mar at the end of the meet, and for reinforcement, Andy Harrington basically said that this is one of those comments, you know, much better than his, you know, than was shown in that career debut. The outsider too, or the fresh face, with a race that has that many horses coming out of the same event, also would lead you to lean a little bit toward Mandela and the Claiborne homebred. Actually, it's not a homebred, but a Muse, the nine with the Mike Smith, and this is another one that, you know, ran okay in her debut. So I have the eight and the nine and a little bit of six. Dancing Bell has got kind of that career maiden look to her, but I think she's got to be considered. She's cutting back the three quarters from a couple of mile efforts and hasn't been seen since January. You know, the work tab is just okay, but Keith DeSormo, plenty dangerous. And in fact, you get the 5 pounds with the bug with Espinoza. The stake tomorrow is the Cal Distaff. Any thoughts about tomorrow's card?
Well, it's 5 furlongs. We're not coming down the hill. It is on the turf course, but it's 5 furlongs. So that means it's the third race in the Santita history where we've run that distance on the turf. An excellent betting race, a full field of 11, two high weights of number 7, How About Zero, and the comebacker number 9, S.Y. Sky. But you could go a lot of different directions here. This is a real, real good betting race that's sandwiched in the late pick 4 and the rainbow pick 6. Love a Honey Badger has a lot of speed from the Peter Miller barn. Phil D'Amato has won this race the last 2 years with Enola Gray and Barbara Beatrice. So S.Y. Sky immediately comes to mind as being dangerous. Meet and Greet came back off a layoff down at Del Mar, sprinting 5 furlongs, this exact same distance for the Maury barn, was much the best. I would encourage you to go back and watch that replay. So you can go in a lot of different directions there, Steve. I think it's a spread race as well, because there's a lot of serious contenders in that race. A very, very good stakes race on the card.
Well, another big weekend, and the West Coast players continue to make their way toward Cup. And, Tom, we're going to count on you for some Breeders' Cup insights as we edge closer. And, as always, appreciate it. And you can follow Tom, of course, Quigley's Corner on Twitter. And each day, Tom's got the terrific preview. I've done a couple of them with Tom myself, and love doing it. And Tom, we appreciate it.
Steve, appreciate the time. Good luck to you and all your listeners, and have a great weekend.
Tom Quigley, folks. Top of the hour, a little past, and Jay Pribman, who I think is at Santa Anita as we speak. And good time actually to catch up during the renovation break. Right? Yeah, it's 11, it's 8:15. Yeah, they should be on the they should be harrowing the course right now. Jay Pribman joins us next. We'll get a report from Jay on his impressions from the weekend, including the juvenile action. But, of course, Jay tracking the classic division for DRF. Nicole Russo and Hammer as well yet in these next 45 minutes. Stay with us. Weekend preview at the races.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.